there, loyal listener. Glad to have you around. Just like CJSF 90.1 FM, you have expansive and diverse tastes. You don't shy away from being challenged by new sounds, and you're always listening for something new. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and making us as much of a part of your day-to-day as you are a part of ours. You complete us.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Merton was an American Catholic writer, mystic, and Trappist monk who died mysteriously in Bangkok, Thailand, when he was 53 years old. The gifts he left behind in his shortened life were immense. His fellow monk and sometimes secretary said, "When you consider the vast amount of writing the man did in his lifetime, the total output staggers you." Merton also balanced his writings with being a novice master for 10 years. He had regular monastic choir requirements. He kept up with a vast amount of correspondence and continued his theological studies. He was also a poet and an extraordinary photographer. He did all this even though his health was not the best, and he never had the services of a regular secretary until just prior to his death. We are the recipients of lavish gifts from this most amazing life, and today we'll be exploring the path of this extraordinary monk with our guest, Father Matthew Fox. Matthew Fox is a priest and was a member of the Dominican Order of the Catholic Church for 34 years. He became an Episcopal priest after being expelled from the Dominican Order by Cardinal Ratzinger, who later became Pope Benedict XVI. Fox holds a doctorate in the history and theology of spirituality and is a scholar in residence with the Academy for the Love of Learning in Santa Fe, New Mexico, as well as the founder and president of Friends of Creation Spirituality. Father Matthew Fox is the author of more than 30 books. Some of them include Original Blessing, Hildegard of Bingen, Letters to Pope Francis, The Coming of the Cosmic Christ, Meister Eckhart, A Mystic Warrior for Our Times, Confessions, The Making of a Post-Denominational Priest, and A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. Join us for the next hour as we explore the life and work of Thomas Merton and his significance for today's world with our guest, Father Matthew Fox. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Matt, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. It's good to be back.
It's great to sit across from you once more. And first of all, I just want to thank you for the dedication in the book and that you mentioned Michael Toms in the dedication. And I that was just thrilling because Thomas Merton was someone very important to Michael's life and his spiritual journey.
Well, I knew that because often Michael would say to me, "I'm a Thomas Merton Catholic." And I think that says a mouthful about Michael because it shows that he was discerning in his Catholicism, and he chose well because Thomas Merton was a major figure and a major thinker. an activist in his own way, too.
Exactly. And it's so unusual to think of a Trappist monk, which is one that really is more sequestered and away from a more hermit-like existence, to be so active in the world. The two didn't seem to kind of match, but they actually do.
Well, they do, and that's one reason I think why Merton is so pertinent today, because he combined deep contemplation with action. He combined the mystical dimension to religion with the prophetic. And he was a voice to be reckoned with in terms of the moral issues of his day, including the civil rights movement. And of course, the Vietnam War. He was the first religious figure in America to come out against the Vietnam War. And ecology, he was out front in the ecological movement. And yet he died in 1968. And in fact, I think I now have real proof that he died a martyr, that he was murdered by the CIA, because I've interviewed now three CIA agents who were there in Southeast Asia at the time that Merton died. And I asked them, did you kill Merton? The first said, I'll neither affirm it nor deny it. The second said, well, we were wallowing in money in the CIA in Southeast Asia at the time. There was absolutely no accountability. If even one agent felt that Merton was a threat to the country, he could have had him done in with no questions asked. But the third person I met, who I met after my book came out a month or two ago, I said, did you kill Merton? He said, yes. And he said, the last 40 years of my life, I've been cleansing my soul of what I did for those 3 years I was working with the CIA as a young man in Southeast Asia. So I think it can really be said now that Merton died a martyr, like his friend, Dr. Martin Luther King, who died the same year in April. Merton died in December. So I think this has to be part of the story.
And Bobby Kennedy died that same.
And Bobby Kennedy died in June of that year. Yeah.
So it was a really tumultuous time in the U.S., especially at that time.
Well, it was. And Merton did not hide behind his monastic seclusion. For example, he was very public about how he was mentoring Father Dan Berrigan and Philip Berrigan, Catholic priests who were committed to nonviolence, but also stood up and did actions to bring attention to the Vietnam War as a moral issue. They spent a lot of time in jail. And they would go and visit Merton regularly at the monastery where he mentored them.
And through the Freedom of Information Act, I think that they know that Merton's correspondence was illegally opened and being by either the FBI or the CIA.
Exactly, just like King's had been.
Right.
And it was against the law even back then. And also his phone calls were intercepted too. So he was definitely on the radar of the powers that be. And remember, he died, as you said, mysteriously in Bangkok, but he had just delivered an address to a couple hundred monks and nuns entitled Karl Marx and Monasticism. Now, this was not the most prudent a choice for a title of a talk in Southeast Asia in 1968, at the height of the Vietnam War.
Of course, Karl Marx...
And he was dead three hours after the talk.
3 hours after the talk, and Karl Marx being considered the father of communism, and so he's delivering this talk...
Yeah.
And then 3 hours later, he's gone.
That's right. And the truth is that many monks, when they heard he died so suddenly, immediately thought it was foul play, because they knew he was getting threatening letters from the CIA and FBI, just as King had been getting before his death, too. So it all adds up. And now that I've actually spoken to three people who were part of the organization, I think we just have to recognize that Merton was a martyr for peace.
But he had also a premonition that he was not going to live a long life.
That's right. He had a number of premonitions, and I bring them to the fore in my conclusion chapter of my book. And I think even his, as you pointed out in the introduction, even his intense workload was part of that. I think he knew that he wasn't going to live too long. And he said that on several occasions. And I think that helps to explain how how immensely active he was as a writer, and in so many other arenas as well. He wrote 60 books. They're not, many of them are not long, but yes. They're deep. They're substantive.
Now, I know that you were invited to Bellarmine University to speak at the 100th anniversary of his birth. And so in that talk, that got you, I believe, to really start to dig through not only his journals and his writings, but the personal writings that you had with Merton. So you were in direct contact with him.
Yes, I was. As a young Dominican in my 20s, I went to my superiors one day and I said, my generation is going to be less interested in religion and more interested in spirituality, which is the experiential dimension to religion. And I said, you're not teaching it here, really, in our classes. You're just presuming it. So someone should go and get a doctorate in spirituality. And make a long story short, I wrote Merton and asked him, where do I go? And he said, go to the Institut Catholique de Paris, Paris. And so with that, it took me a while, but I convinced my superiors to send me to Paris. And it's in Paris that I met my mentor, Pierre Chenu, a wonderful French Dominican who was 75 years old at the time. And he introduced me to the creation spirituality tradition, which became so important to me. So as I say, I owe Merton all the trouble I got in, because if I had not studied in Paris, I never would have met
Chenu. But also, he was a mentor of Merton's as well, wasn't
he? That's right. That's something I discovered in researching this book that I did not know. But Merton had tremendous respect for Chenu, and in fact, Chenu really affected him. Chenu is a great historian, and he gave Merton a perspective on the history of Christianity and how the Constantinian era took over the empire building, took over the direction of the church for centuries, and how the Second Vatican Council, which was occurring in the 60s when Merton was at his height, how that was an effort to deconstruct the Constantinian era that had hung around in Christianity for so long.
So the Constantinian era really was based on the teachings of Saint Augustine, right?
Well, a combination of Augustine and some pseudo-documents from the 4th century, supposedly bequeathing the empire to the Pope, which, of course, were forged. But in the Middle Ages, not everyone realized or agreed that they were forged documents.
There was no WikiLeaks at the time.
That's right. Where was WikiLeaks when we needed
them? Right, right. So that his idea was very pessimistic, and that everything is based on the fall and redemption.
Yes.
So can you say something about that particular school of thought?
Yes, it was Augustine who came up with the term original sin. And we're talking 4th century now. And that is a century that the church took over the empire because the empire collapsed. And so there was this marriage of empire to pessimism and really patriarchal thinking. And Augustine was very dualistic. He said, for example, spirit is whatever is not matter. So that you can't get more dualistic than that, splitting spirit from matter. And he was also very misogynist. He said, man but not woman is made in the image and likeness of God. So all this really took the church in a direction that I think was extremely off-center from the teaching of Jesus on the one hand, but also from just healthy living.
We'll talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Father Matthew Fox. He's the author of A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. And if you'd like to know more about his work, you can go to his website, matthewfox.org. Or you can give there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Father Matthew Fox, and he's the author of many books, including A Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. And Matthew, Thomas Merton, this Trappist monk, really started to tune into something beyond the rigid standards of the Catholic Church at the time, of the fall and redemption, the body as not being a sacred place, that sexuality is not a good thing except to procreate and all of that. So how did Thomas Merton come to this creation spirituality sort of thinking?
Well, it was a journey for him because he entered the monastery in 1940. 1948, he wrote his best-selling autobiography called Seven Story Mountain, and it really was a big hit. And but it was not till 1958 that he really began to undergo a conversion, a shift, a real shift in consciousness, because you can see in his autobiography a lot of dualism, a lot of guilt, a lot of shame. He had led quite a ribald life as a young man and so forth. He had fathered a child illegitimately and so forth, like St. Augustine had. And so he had this attitude of guilt that he carried, like Augustine had too. But Augustine lived, 26 years longer than Merton. He never got over his guilt. He dumped it on the rest of us for 16 centuries. But Merton, thank God, in 1958 had this awakening, and it occurred through two people. First, Hidatsu Suzuki, the Zen thinker from philosopher from Japan, who brought Zen to North America. And Merton started correspondence with him. And then Suzuki pushed him to study Eckhart, Meister Eckhart, more deeply, because he felt Eckhart was the epitome of Western mysticism.
Now,
and he was non-dualistic.
And I know that you've written about Eckhart. And so what century did he live in?
Meister Eckhart,
kind of a maverick too.
Oh, definitely. He was a Dominican like I was, and like Thomas Aquinas was, and he lived from the late 13th century to 1328, so early 14th century. He was 17 when Thomas Aquinas died. He was 13 when Rumi died. He was a contemporary of Hafiz, the great Sufi mystic who followed on Rumi. So he was living in a special time too. But it was Eckhart who really converted Merton from being a dualistic, guilt-ridden, Augustinian-thinking monk to being a prophetic Christian the last 10 years of his life.
And when you use the word prophetic, can you say what you mean by a prophetic Christian?
Sure. Well, Rabbi Heschel, who's the honorable exponent of the prophetic tradition in Israel, he says that the prophet's primary work is to interfere. So the prophet says no. The prophet stands up and says no to injustice. And so Merton's last 10 years of his life, he was publishing books like Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander, Raids on the Unspeakable, a lot of books that were about the cultural moral issues of the 1960s. He befriended very much Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In fact, an interesting story is that King and Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk, were scheduled to have a retreat with Thomas Merton at Merton's Gethsemane Abbey the very week that King had to cancel the retreat and go marching in Memphis on behalf of the garbage collectors and, of course, got murdered. So history would have been very changed, I think, had that retreat gone through and King had not taken that march, of course. So the three of them were very supportive of one another. In fact, Thich Nhat Hanh nominated Merton for a Nobel Peace Prize after he died because of the strong stand that Merton took against the Vietnam War.
I remember sitting down with Michael, and Michael did an interview with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Mm. And I remember at one point he asked the Dalai Lama about Thomas Merton, and we just watched his countenance just absolutely light up. He just got very animated in his feelings about meeting Thomas Merton there on that trip that he did, that last trip to the East. And I remember stories that Thomas Merton was not interested in meeting the Dalai Lama. He thought, I don't want to meet a Buddhist pope. enough popes already.
But you know, the Dalai Lama was only 33 at the time when they met, and Merton was, of course, 53. And they got along so well that they both canceled their meetings for the next day. So they spent this extra day together that was not planned. And it definitely was mutual. And just after the book came out, I met this North American Buddhist who was close to the Dalai Lama, and he told me this story. He said, last year, the Dalai Lama was asked by a journalist, do you believe in God? And the Dalai Lama said, well, yes. And the journalist said, well, are you sure? Because a lot of Buddhists, he said, do not use the word God, and so I want to push you. Do you believe in God? And what God do you believe in? And the Dalai Lama paused, and he said, I believe in the God of Thomas Merton.
Oh, I am thrilled to hear that. That is
great. That's a pretty good endorsement, isn't
that
it?
That is a fabulous.
And he also told a friend of mine who met him, who is very much a lover of Thomas Merton and his work. He told this friend, Thomas Merton is my spiritual father.
There you go.
So right. There you go. And it's beautiful that you were in the presence of the Dalai Lama when this subject came up of Thomas Merton. I'm very glad to hear that story.
And so what do you suppose he meant by Thomas Merton's God? I mean, because I feel like your God and Thomas Merton's God are very, very similar.
And Meister Eckhart's
and
God.
Right.
You see, Merton was so influenced by Eckhart for the last 10 years that he often said that Eckhart is my lifeboat. Eckhart is my lifeboat. And of course, one thing that Eckhart did for him was he opened Merton up to the East. And so a lot of Merton's work was pioneering about bringing East and West together, interfaith. And remember, back then in the 60s, this was new ground for a lot of people. This is why he made his journey East, to meet a lot of Hindu teachers in India and Ceylon, and also the Dalai Lama. And he also met the founder, who became the founder of Naropa University,
Trugyam.
Trungpa. Yes, and he was only a young man at the time.
I think
he was 30 or so, and they hit it off. But also Merton had a profound mystical experience at a great Buddha shrine in Ceylon just shortly before he went to Bangkok and died. And it was a very powerful experience for him. He felt it was a real coming together of his whole spiritual life there. So there is another whole field in which Merton was leading the way, and that is he was a pioneer in terms of interfaith, or what I call deep ecumenism.
Didn't he write to you at some point that, and you use it, I think, in your book, if I remember correctly, that it, just before, maybe a couple of months before he took that trip, that I have found a way to God?
Yes. Actually, when he wrote his letter to me, which I exegete and reproduce in this book, it was January 1967. He died in December of 68. But in it, he thanked me for going ahead and studying spirituality. And this is how he put it. He said, I'm glad you're going to work on spiritual theology. I do think we are lying down on the job when we leave others to investigate mysticism, while we concentrate on more practical things. What people want of us, after all, is the way to God. So that's where I got the title for the book, calling it A Way to God. But it's the four paths of creation spirituality that really leap out to me when I read a Thomas Merton. And it goes back to your question, what kind of God did Merton worship, you see? The God of awe and wonder and beauty, the via positiva, the God of silence and nothingness, and of pathos and suffering, the via negativa, the God of creativity. Merton was nothing if not creative. He was not only, as you pointed out, a photographer and a writer and a poet, he also did calligraphy, and he
was a big fan of jazz.
Big fan of jazz, exactly, yeah. And music, exactly. And And the art of friendship was very important to him. And then the Via Transformativa is the God of justice and compassion. And that's the prophetic side to Merton that is so strong and comes out in so many ways. Here's just one story, for example. When Rachel Carson came out with her book Silent Spring in 1962, it, of course, has been called the first shot in the environmental movement. She was immediately fired by the science department at her university, who called her, quote, a hysterical woman in love with trees and bunnies, unquote. Well, Merton, in contrast, wrote her a letter almost immediately. He read her book, wrote a letter and thanked, a three-page letter praising her for her book, saying that because of her research, they were now ceasing to use DDT on the monastic farm. And because of her work, he understood why so many birds had been disappearing from the farm over the years that he was there. And as he wrote, supporting her and rebutting criticisms, he said, people complain that I love birds too much. He said, you can love both birds and people. And that's the point. You can love trees and people. It's not exactly an either or, is it?
Right, right. And then that goes to, and you mentioned Thomas Berry, Father Thomas Berry, in your book, who's a theologian and also a great proponent of ecology and what's going on. And Berry, that if I can quote the quote you use in the book, is the absence of the sense of the sacred is the basic flaw in many of our efforts at ecologically or environmentally adjusting to our human presence in the natural world. So he's really saying, hey, there's a sacred quality here. It's not just about, renewable resources. I mean, that's part of it, but it's deeper than that.
Absolutely deeper.
What would you have to say about that?
Absolutely. Thomas Berry did a preface to a good book on Merton's. It's a collection of Merton's meditations on nature. And Merton had so much to say about the beauty of nature and its spiritual and sacred sense to us. After all, Merton was Celtic. Some of his relatives were from Wales. And he's very attuned to the sacredness of nature. That's such a big part of his Celtic tradition. But he has some marvelous passages where he talks about the spiritual dimension to nature. For example, he says, every plant that stands in the light of the sun is a saint and an outlaw. Mm-hmm. Every tree that brings forth blossoms without the command of man is powerful in the sight of God. Every star that man has not counted is a world of sanity and perfection. And in one of his journals, he talks to himself. He says, dance in this sun, you tepid idiot. Wake up and dance in the clarity of perfect contradiction. You fool, it is life that makes you dance. Have you forgotten? So he has this deep appreciation of the sacredness of nature.
It's like life doesn't need to be redeemed. It needs to be, as in this, celebrated.
Exactly. Right, and encountered in a deep way.
I'm here with Matthew Fox, and we're talking about the journey of Thomas Merton. He's the author of The Way to God, Thomas Merton's Creation Spirituality Journey. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can